And we left off, and we are heading into Deuteronomy 14. Caption I have here from Delitzsch is avoiding the mourning customs of the heathen and unclean food. So we begin in verse 1. You are the sons of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourselves or make any baldness on your foreheads for the dead. Yeah. Yeah, you wonder what those other people were doing. So I joke on one of our calendars. Said absolutely no interpretive dancing in the crosswalk. And the lady says, suddenly I feel like dancing. Yeah. And then you read through these weird laws, and you're not allowed to bring a pet goose into a bar. What? Why does somebody have to make a law like that? Who did what?
Because somebody did.
And that's the great question. What caused these laws? But what were the other people doing in that day? Cutting themselves and making baldness on their foreheads for the dead.
They say they were pulling their hair out for the dead. For
whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a disfiguring of themselves. To demonstrate passionate expressions of sorrow. Okay. Verse 2.
For you are a people holy to the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you to be the people for his treasured possession of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth.
Okay. Did you notice the term treasured possession? Do you remember where that first came up? Mm-mm. Okay, let me go back to it. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Exodus 19, verse 4. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And that is the first words at Sinai. So that's what we're harking back to. Verse 3. You shall not eat any abomination, like flan or tiramisu.
Oh, come on. I like tiramisu. He does. It's too squishy. Flan, the same thing.
There's just something wrong about it.
My kids would say zippy zucchini. It was a casserole I tried once they did not like.
Verse 4.
These are the animals you may eat. The ox, the sheep, the goat.
The deer, the gazelle, the roebuck, the wild goat, the ibex, the antelope, and the mountain sheep. So the list goes on. And verse 6.
Every animal that parts the hoof and has the hoof cloven in two and chews the cud, among the animals you may eat.
Yet of those that chew the cud or have the hoof cloven, you shall not eat these, the camel, the hare, and the rock badger, because they chew the cud but do not part the hoof, are unclean for you.
Huh. You can have them as a pet, but don't eat them.
You can ride them if you
verse 8.
Well, the rabbit surprises me.
Yeah.
They're good.
That was a staple to people in the wilderness.
Yeah, they're tasty.
Somebody read verse 8 and we'll go into some commentary on this.
The pig is also unclean, although it has a split hoof. It does not chew the cud. You are not to eat their meat or touch their carcasses.
Oh.
Okay.
We're in trouble.
So
I love my bacon.
So the whole point of this was more significant than these are clean and unclean animals. The significance goes back to you are my treasured possession. The Israelites were set apart. And the Old Testament definition of the word sanctification, see, in the New Testament, we think of holiness and sinlessness. In the Old Testament, it was set apart for God's use. It's a dual definition, and the Bible moves back and forth between the two definitions. And you kind of got to be careful when you run into the term sanctification, Old Testament and New Testament, because you have to just pause for a second and say, which path is that following initially? Everything's involved, brought together at the end, but which is the initial one? And in this case, set aside for God's use is, that's the very strong indicator, because this section is introduced with the phrase, my treasured possession. So set apart means it is by God's choice. Later on, when Peter is, where's he at? Joppa. And he sees the vision of the sheet coming down and the animals clean and unclean. Rise, Peter, kill and eat. And no, Lord, nothing unclean has ever touched my lips. What God has called clean, call not unclean. The Israelites were set apart for God's use in order to set down the principles of the kingdom of God, which in their most basic form is matters of salvation and forgiveness of sins. And the Israelites were to be a picture and an example so that the whole thing could spread to the whole world and God's treasured possession could be those of every tribe and people and nation and language. So you have the before and after, and in the Old Testament scheme of things, then you have the unclean and clean animals. Again, an illustration of the whole of nature and the set apart for God's use. And there are certain things that, well, we could work at coming up with logical explanations and reasons in cleanliness and hygiene and health for certain things to be called clean and others unclean. But if we're using the word sanctification and treasured possession, then some of that goes without an explanation. And this is just simply how God set things up for his people of the Old Testament to follow him, to walk with him, to be that treasured possession so that he could begin to spread his kingdom to the whole world. Second indication of that is how the chapter actually starts with, do not follow the heathens, the pagans, the nations around in their practices of how they mourn the dead. You are a treasured possession. And the whole thing needs to be kept in that connection. Otherwise, we run into tiny little laws and rules and regulations and lose our way. That's my comment. So I'll eat rabbit. Verse 9, of all that are in the waters, you may eat these. Whatever has fins and scales, you may eat. Verse 10.
And whatever does not have fins and scales, you shall not eat. It is unclean for you.
Yeah, so.
Turtles, no. Out of the question.
Lobster, no. Not even.
Godhead,
rock no. Lobster.
Seaweed.
Huh?
Seaweed.
Yeah, seaweed soup.
There's a seaweed that tastes like bacon.
What? Well, seaweed's a plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, does that make it unclean?
But again, remember we're following the definition of sanctification, set apart. And in the New Testament, you've got Peter and the vision. So you can go to that Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, but it doesn't say anything about seaweed in here.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have fins and scales.
Yeah, well, up there with that, do not eat any detestable thing.
Yeah.
Right, huh? Mike?
Yeah.
Seaweed is up there with verse 3, and do not eat any detestable thing. Along with locusts and...
Oh, you darkened of mind.
Not the creature either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You may eat all clean birds. Verse 12.
These are the ones that you shall not eat. The eagle, the bearded vulture, the black vulture.
The kite, the falcon of any kind. Verse 14.
Any kind of raven.
The ostrich, the nighthawk, the seagull, the hawk of any kind. 16.
The little owl, the great owl, the white owl.
And the tawny owl, the carrion vulture, and the cormorant. And who would want to eat the carrion vulture anyway?
Oh.
18.
The stork, the heron of any kind, the hoopoe, and the bat.
Does anybody know what a hoopoe is?
No, I'm going to have to go back to Brookfield.
And the bat? Oh.
That'd be like eating a mouse.
Yeah. And all winged insects are unclean for you. They shall not be eaten.
Oh, that includes the locusts.
Yeah, we're about to get a hoard of them.
Is it the year?
It's the year.
Not so much here as southeast of here.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I thought it was here, too.
We got them in Darien.
Verse 20.
All plain winged things you may eat.
Mm-hmm. You shall not eat anything that has died naturally. You may give it to the sojourner who is within your towns that he may eat it, or you may sell it to a foreigner, for you are a people holy to the Lord your God. Notice that. Again, it is the set apart for God's use. And to be the people that sets up this picture of salvation, and all of it goes back to that constantly. But then how does the section end? Once again, you shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk.
This, our Bible study is getting to me. We had a roast on Sunday with, you know, red potatoes and fresh green beans, and we always put sour cream on our potatoes. And as I was taking a bite of my meat, some of the
delicious sour cream was on my meat, and I thought of that. And I thought, oh, never thought of it before. But yep. Here I go, eating it together and thinking it tasted good, and that's kind of sad.
And that's the Jewish extension
of
this prescription. But the whole point down to the center of it is the baby animal in its mother's milk, its own mother. And the reason why that was prescribed, to say it again, is this is the image of mercy that God has planted in nature. And you just do not trample mercy. Now,
I mean, not to be a pain, but was it, it's mother's milk, so you could use it, you know, another cow's milk? Or was it just no milk, no meat?
Well, that's where the Jewish people began to extend things.
Okay.
But the original core is that image of mercy. Does that mean you can take a baby animal and use a different mother's milk?
That's what I meant.
That's a little bit close. But to eat a beef and cheddar sandwich, that's quite different.
That's far reaching.
An adult animal and a slice of cheese, that's not the same. That's not the core of the picture of mercy.
Well, it also says do not cook. So that's in the preparation of the meat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not after, right.
Yeah. But don't lose sight of the fact that there is a purpose and a reason and a core lesson there. And when you extend too far out, you lose the core. And that's what the Jewish people end up doing all over the place in the extensions of the commandments. To have a cheese and sausage pizza would violate their prescriptions, but these are rules of man. What God said is the baby animal in its mother's milk, because respect the mother and baby relationship. Respect the relationship of the mother and the child within the womb. Respect those things, because in nature, the instinct of the mother is toward the baby to care for at her own sacrifice. It goes back again and again and again to mercy, where when God sets up the arrows pointing in that direction, what's it pointing to? Isaiah 49. I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. And that's why this prescription ends up being the last one in all of the dietary lists over and over and over again.
Do you think this restricted diet was hard for them to follow?
Yeah, was he restricting them from stuff that they had eaten before?
No, in certain senses, I'm guessing it would have been hard to follow, but you get used to it. Trust me.
Yeah.
When your diet's restricted in a certain way, it takes a while, but you get used to it.
Mm.
And
the whole idea is to set them apart from everybody else.
Yes. Their sanctification, Old Testament, set apart for God's use. What use is he making of them? To set up the picture for the whole world of what forgiveness of sins, redemption, atonement, and mercy is all about. And be that picture. Is that an unreasonable thing to ask? No. Be that picture. Is that a request for us in our day? Be that picture. of redemption and atonement and forgiveness and mercy. And see, when you push back into what's the core of this, a lot of things make sense that would otherwise seem just point by point isolated commands. So now we go to the next section, tithes. 22.
Be sure to set aside a tenth of all that your fields produce each year.
Mm-hmm. And before the Lord your God in the place that he will choose, that will be the place where he'll cause the tabernacle and the temple then after that, in the place that he will choose to make his name dwell there, you shall eat the tithe of your grain, of your wine, and of your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and flock, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. Practical circumstances, if your field yields thousands of bushels of corn, do you got to eat hundreds of bushels of corn there at the sanctuary? No. You bring the tithe and you eat some of it, and the rest of it is given for God's use, which will be variously for the priests, Levites, and for the poor. And if that tithe was observed as it was designed, there would be nobody going hungry at all. And God would bless. God would bless overabundantly. Verse 24.
And if the way is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe, then the Lord your God blesses you, because the place is too far from you, which the Lord your God chooses to set his name there.
Okay. Let me add something in. And if the tithe is huge, and it's impractical to carry it, because the bigger it is, the harder it is to transport it. So verse 25, then you shall turn it into money and bind up the money in your hand and go to the place that the Lord your God chooses. Verse 26.
Use the silver to buy whatever you like, cattle, sheep, wine, or other fermented drink, or anything you wish. Then you and your household shall eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice.
Mm-hmm. And you shall not neglect the Levite who is within your towns, for he has no portion or inheritance with you. Okay, that's the first of the directions of where the excess is going. And verse 28 begins to tell us more about what to do with the excess. Verse 28.
At the end of every 3 years, bring all the tithes of that year's produce and store it in your towns.
What, wait? Is it not going up to Jerusalem or Shiloh? Really? This is another tithe, isn't it? And Delitzsch will give this a whole different name than the regular tithe. Verse 29, where we get that other name. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, who are within your towns, shall come and eat and be filled, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands that you do. So this was known as the poor tithe. And it's on the third year, on the sixth year, and then there's the Sabbath year.
What was it called, Pastor?
The poor tithe is what Delitzsch calls it. Because it's not sent to the tabernacle, it's not sent to the temple, it's not sent to Jerusalem. It's within your towns. And it's to be given to those who do not have their own. And it's quite remarkable. God does not ask for all of that 10% to be given to him and brought to the temple and burned or whatnot. It's in here, feed your poor neighbor. And if they did that, the tithe of the produce of that year, again, this would go a very long way to easing the suffering of those who were homeless or widowed or fatherless or the sojourner, or on and on and on it went.
And this is a good example of how the other gods do not act. They do not show mercy, or, you know, totally different. Mm-hmm. They were like, you bring it all to me.
Yeah.
Burn a kid or two while you're at it.
Okay. So God is setting up a pattern of mercy, isn't he? And this does spring off of that last of the dietary restrictions, because it has to do with mercy. So then to chapter 15, at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release. What's that mean? Verse two.
And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor shall release what he has lent to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor, his brother, because the Lord's release has been proclaimed.
Okay. The Sabbath year. Of a foreigner, you may exact it. But whatever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. So in relationship to those outside, it was make fair contracts and don't cheat them. But for your fellow child of God, fellow covenant person within the congregation and the covenant relationship, after the seventh year, there's a release. Now, the sabbatical year for the land is one thing. For those who have sold themselves into slavery, it's a different year. It's not necessarily the same calendar year. And there'll be more opportunity to clarify that as we go. Verse four.
But there will be no poor among you. For the Lord will bless you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance to possess.
Okay. If only you will strictly obey the voice of the Lord your God, being careful to do all this commandment that I command you today. Go on, verse 6.
For the Lord your God will bless you, as he has promised, and you will lend to many nations, but will borrow from none.
There's a little more.
Oh, sorry. You will rule over many nations, but none will rule over you.
Okay. So prosperity goes a long way to strengthen a nation.
And to end poverty.
Yeah.
Because I say there won't be any poor among you if you follow my voice.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not real good at that.
Now, to get into more specifics, verse 7. If among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother. Okay, verse 8.
Rather be open-handed and freely lend him whatever he needs.
Ah, but we know that at the seventh year, you have to release that debt. Take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart, and you say, the seventh year, the year of release is near, and your eye looks look grudgingly on your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cried to the Lord against you, and you be guilty of sin.
Whoa.
So your brother in his time of need is more important than your money. Mm. Why? Because what did we start this whole section out with?
Mercy.
Mm-hmm. So 10, verse 10.
Give generously to him and do so without a grudging heart. Then because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything you put your hand to.
Okay. Principle in life. Be useful for the kingdom of God. That's just a basic principle. Because God is doing what he is doing. He is giving his blessings. He is feeding those who are hungry. He is feeding the poor, clothing the naked, etc., etc., etc. You want to be a part of that? That's God's work. If you work at being a part of that, and if he is able to use you in his work of doing those things, then he will. But if you hold back and say, no, I'm going to keep it all, why should he try and work through you? He will find somebody else that he can work through to help your neighbor and show mercy to your neighbor. So for a church, be a part of Jesus' work, spreading the kingdom. Because if you are useful for the kingdom, Jesus will use you, Jesus will bless you. If a congregation goes on hard times and says, oh, we have to cut back, we have to not do this, not do that, so that we can meet the budget, wrong. Be useful for the kingdom. And then Jesus will use you in some way, shape, or form, and through means that you haven't considered. Things will come along that surprise you, and Jesus will take up your offer to be used for his kingdom. If you wish to have prosperity, what is the purpose of God giving his blessings? It is to be a blessing to the entire world. But if you close your hand and hold everything back, are you being a part of God's work? If you will not be a part of God's work, he will find somebody else. And they will receive the extra blessing so that they can spread that extra blessing. That's my understanding of how things actually work in this world. And I will argue that against the cynic, against the bean counter, I'm going to seek to be used by God. And I'll do that all my days. And then he blesses. And when he decides to finish the course in my life, then okay. But that's my plan in life. That's why I didn't retire.
You would have gone crazy if you retired anyway.
It's not only I would have gone crazy, but this is my understanding of all of the principles of how it actually really works.
Yeah.
In defiance of everybody who says, no, that's impractical, and no, you're being idealistic. No, this is how it really works. Because it is done that way by the one who created it all. So to the Israelites, don't hold back your hand. If you have a little bit of shortage, but your neighbor has a very great need, seize on the opportunity to be used by God and see if he doesn't make provisions that he can use you more to give more access to the one who is in need. Challenge God on that. Take him up on it and see if he doesn't. Or one of the prophets, is it Habakkuk or Haggai? Bring in the whole tithe and see if I don't open the storehouses of heaven. Because part of the purpose of what God gives is to pass on those blessings. So, and this goes into Paul at the end of Ephesians chapter 5, is it? Okay, I have to chase that down because I want the actual wording, Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 4. Or is it? Oh, yeah. Ephesians 4, 28. Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. The purpose of work is to feed yourself, provide for your family, and be able to be there for your neighbor in his time of need. And your neighbor is called to work so that he may feed himself and his family and be there in your time of need. And this is the honorable, somebody used the phrase civil society with a connection to God. That we are doing these things, and I need to finish the detour and rant and rave.
So what about the scammers?
Yeah, that's why you do things locally, because there are scammers. And the local community knows who the scammers are better than the state government. The state government has no idea who in our neighborhood is running a scam. The neighbors know. The best charity is local. A church should seek out a connection with those who are in need. So, well, we did this down south. We had a lady who had connections with everybody in town practically that was poor. And so we took her lead, and it's, where should we give this? And if she said somebody is in need, okay, she knew. But then there were those who, they didn't want to work, they wanted to scam. And, you know, because she was in that part of the community, she knew and could say, don't do this.
Because your money's going to go to the casino or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And up here, we've got a few connections. And we cultivate those connections and don't just throw it into a big pot where somebody who doesn't know will hand it out first come, first serve. And the one who shows up with the best story, you know, sitting in the church office, you hear stories.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, they are worked up and they are practiced. And then you run into somebody, a member of the congregation knows them and knows their situation. And then it's much more fruitful to give through that route. Besides which, very often the ones who really need it won't come asking with their story. The ones that come asking with their story, they may or may not. And so you want to get past that to where the need is greatest.
Yeah, and often have been to every church in 100-mile radius and then they drive off in a Cadillac. Because they make more money than any of us doing panhandling.
No, there are stories. There are all kinds of stories.
There are.
Okay. We need to move on. Verse 12.
Oh, 11.
11. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. It's true. Things will happen in this life. Therefore, I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in your land. Because that's the Lord's work. Verse 12.
If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you, he shall serve you 6 years, and in the seventh year, you shall let him go free from you.
Okay. And this is regardless of when the Sabbath year is, he is to go free. He may serve through a Sabbath year, but there's more to be said. Verse 13, and when you let him go free from you, you shall not let him go empty-handed. Oh, really? Delitzsch departs into, because he's serving you as your brother Israelite has profited you, shall we say, twice what the hired man will profit you. So you want to make up that second half when you let him go. So verse 14.
Supply him liberally from your flock, your threshing floor, and your wine press. Give to him as the Lord God has blessed you.
Yep. And a call to remember. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this today. So when the Israelites were getting ready to go out from Egypt, what did they do going off to their neighbors?
They borrowed all the gold.
Hey, you got any gold or jewelry I can take with me? Lend me a few pounds of gold.
And then they made a golden calf and got to eat their gold.
Yes, drink it.
Drink it.
Yeah.
All over the desert
floor. But that wasn't all of the gold that they brought out. They plundered Egypt. For, as God told Moses, 400 years of work, their wages they then collected. Mm-hmm. And this is in the background of what Moses is saying in this verse. Your fellow Israelite, he gave you 7 years of work. Okay.
And as Christians, we can read, remember that you were slaves to sin and the Lord your God redeemed you
mm-hmm.
through Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if God doesn't hold back his son given to you, we shouldn't hold back from those that are in need.
Yep. Verse 16.
But if he says to you, I will not go from you, out from you, because he loves you and your household, since he is well off with you.
Okay. There became certain phrases associated with this. The year of the doorpost.
Mm.
And because it was connected with the Passover, there's at least one spot I ran into where the Passover was called doorpost day. What? Okay, let's see what happens then. Then you shall take an awl and put it through his ear into the door, and he shall be your slave forever for the rest of his life. And to your female slave, you shall do the same.
It make you think twice about doing it.
Oh, come on. How many of you ladies have pierced ears?
Yeah, not with an awl.
Boom. And there it is.
This hole? Well, let me hang something from it.
And where did they put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost?
About the height of
of an earlobe. And that's a little tidbit from the rabbis that took me until last year or the year before to actually read that. And so we know where the blood of the lamb was marked on the door. And so when you take the center of the lintel and 2/3 of the way up the doorpost on either side, you know what you've made. It's the sign of the cross. And everything points back to, what was the theme we started this whole thing out with?
Mercy.
Yeah. Okay. Verse 18.
It shall not seem hard to you when you let him go free from you, for at half the cost of a hired servant, he has served you 6 years. So the Lord your God will bless you in all that you do.
Okay. So there you are. There's the other half of the, this is what it would have cost you. But you are giving it, and you are giving it freely. And by giving it freely, you are connecting with God's work of blessing the whole world and pouring out his blessings, and you are being a part of that and are being used by God for the pouring out of his blessings. And if some rich guy invited you to work for him, giving away money, what do you think? Would you do that? And maybe some of the money would come to you as well? Yeah. Well, that's the operation God is doing.
Pastor, okay. I have a question about slaves. Who decided back at that time who was going to be slaves? How was that chosen?
Well, within Israel, that was if everything went wrong with your finances and you ended up with basically nothing, you could sell yourself into servitude to a fellow Israelite. And so you would become part of his family, and there would be some compensation. There would also be, you would have work, you would have food, you would have clothes, you would have a place to live. And for 6 years, you could do that, get back on your feet. And then he was commanded when it was time for your release to just load you down with all kinds of stuff so that you could get a new start in life. So it ended up being a provision for those who financially and in their efforts in life, just everything failed.
So they're deciding themselves.
Yes. That was a...
But back up in 12, when you're talking about Hebrew.
Okay. Footnote in verse 12. Because the Hebrew has this thing with active, passive, and there's another. Is it tense or what is it?
Voice. Oh. Active voice, passive
active, voice. Passive voice, and there is another voice. The Hebrew grammar calls it middle voice. What is middle voice? Footnote. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold, footnote, or sells himself. Okay.
Are they saying they're inferior?
I can't make it on my own. Let me sell 6 years of me to you. And you purchase him or her, the purchase price would then be set aside and, so to speak, banked.
Or pay off the debts.
Or pay off the debts and what was left over, bank it. And then at the end of the 6 years, you are to remember that he would have cost you twice as much if you had to hire him in the open market. So give that other half. And that's actually, considering the alternative in that day, that's an amazingly shrewd provision to make for somebody to help them get back on their feet. There is also, and we ran across this, was it Exodus or Leviticus? If he sells himself into slavery to you, and there is a kinsman redeemer who can purchase him free, that's allowed to happen. Or if he is able to set aside money and purchase his freedom, that he's able to do. So there are three ways out of this. But if he's just abjectly poor and is not able to gather any resources to re-enter into freedom, then at the end of the 6 years, you know, what was the purchase price? He would have cost you twice as much. Load him down with good things and provisions and stuff for the future. You can almost imagine and go and see that he has a place to live and is set up and his household is reestablished. And that is, that's an amazing arrangement, I think. And of course, the slavery does not mean that he's property. It's the years of his life that are your purchase and his labor for those years. His children are not property, and he is not to do with as you see fit. Now, God, in setting all of this up, you get the idea that God is very intimately acquainted with the conditions of the poor. It's like Jesus hanging out with the poor in town after town. He knows what their life is all about. But let's finish a chapter. All the firstborn males that are born of your herd and flock, you shall dedicate to the Lord your God. You shall do no work with the firstborn of your herd, nor shear the firstborn of your flock. Okay, so they're not to be beasts of burden. Verse 20.
You shall eat it, you and your household, before the Lord your God, year by year, at the place that the Lord will choose.
Mm-hmm. But if it has any blemish, if it is lame or blind or has any serious blemish, whatever, you shall not sacrifice it to the Lord your God. Verse 22.
You are to eat it in your own towns. Both the ceremonial unclean and the clean may eat it, as if it were gazelle or deer.
Yeah, which is a clean animal that is not a sacrificial animal. It's clean for you to eat, but it's not clean for sacrifice. Only you shall not eat its blood. You shall pour it out on the ground like water. Yeah, that's an hour. Huh. And it's, you know, my wrap up here is, this is fascinating how so much of this focuses in on mercy. And if you didn't know how to find it there, you might not see it. But it is there. It is. It runs all through this section. I'm done.